Acorns are jobbing off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 19, Figs, A Taste of History. December 10th, 2013. I'm your host, Sarah, podcasting from Yin Hu Cha Yuan, Silver Lake Tea House. Show notes for this episode are located on my website, yarns@yinhu.com. This week I heard from listeners RMH258, Fat Cat Knits, who is Ginny from New York, and Laura T1898 from Blairstown, New Jersey. Also, Lori7711 posted a review on iTunes saying the podcast is just what we needed. Wow. And informative and fun. Thanks for the review. You certainly want to enter the Little Things contest for a chance to win a special package of little luxuries from Sherry at Spinner's End Farm. A few weeks ago, I bought a few of Sherry's lotion bars as stocking stuffers. I couldn't resist keeping one of them for myself, and it's wonderful. I've been using it every time I finish knitting and just want to pamper my hands a little bit. To enter the contest, go to the contest thread on Ravelry and reply with something little you do to de-stress or keep stress at bay during the holiday season. Excellent suggestions are already accumulating on the thread, so check it out. I will announce the randomly selected winner on the January 4th episode. If you've never had a fig before, it will not, cannot taste, smell, look, or feel as you imagined it would, because a ripe fig tastes sweeter than any dried nugget of trail mix fig, and a plump one smells gentler than any hyper-syruped canned version. A small, pear-shaped delicacy, its skin ranges from a soft white to a purpley-black, its flesh from a yellowish pink to a vibrant pinkish red. A knife slices through the fruit like soft butter. The tiny edible seeds seem unending, weaving layer upon layer of texture and flavor within the succulent fig. All ridges work inward to a core, painting a relief portrait of soft inner thighs. When you eat a fig, you are tasting history. Cleopatra, Dionysian orgies, the Roman Saturnalia. And when its juice runs over your tongue, you are drinking pure, unadulterated sensuality. This passage is from Intercourses, an aphrodisiac cookbook by Martha Hopkins and Randall Lockridge, and it provides an introduction to today's theme, the fig. I'm here at Yin Hu on Tuesday. We had a snow day today at school, and so there's just this luxurious feeling of quiet and calm, and it was really the best kind of snow day because there wasn't really very much snow. There wasn't anything to shovel. I'm not sure if the weather was worse near my school. It was kind of unusual that we were granted a snow day so early in the season. And so I'm really pleased to have a little extra time and bring Yarns at Yin Hu listeners an episode that I've been thinking about and researching for and working on for a while, but I haven't had the chance to record it. I'm going to move through some of the usual segments, but the topic will always be figs in some way or another. This week's episode features segments titled Ever Expanding Skill Set, A Little Bit of Learning, The Back Porch, The Front Porch, and Off the Shelf. Ever Expanding Skill Set. Well, my history with the fig is not incredibly extensive. Probably my introduction to them as a child was in Fig Newtons. But I remember that on very rare occasions, my mother seemed to procure some from a market or maybe from someone she knew. And it wasn't very often that she would even serve them to us kids. She kept them for herself and my father because there were only usually a handful of them. And later on, when products like figs became more popular and more widely available in the Northeast in supermarkets and things like that, we were able to get figs sometimes, and the way we always prepared them was for either an appetizer course or a dessert, sliced in half, roasted in the oven under the broiler, and topped with a small dollop of ricotta cheese and a drizzle of honey, because my parents kept bees throughout my childhood. We always had some honey from those bees. I don't know if you feel this way when you eat certain foods, but when I'm eating a fig, it always seems like it's something forbidden or something I'm only able to have by virtue of some special situation in the universe that's granting it to me. That's been my relationship with figs. For very special occasions, something very exotic, something connected to literature and culture and passion. So it was such a delight and a surprise for me when one of my coworkers, just in passing conversation, mentioned that a friend of his had given him a fig tree. He had planted it very close to the side of his house, and without his doing anything to pamper it or to coach it along, it was yielding a great deal of fruit. So I was overjoyed, as you can imagine, and he started bringing in a few figs now and then. And most of them would be ripening over the summertime when we really wouldn't see each other. So 2 years ago, he came in with what I think has to be one of the best ideas that I've ever had the satisfaction of being in on. He said, "What I'm going to do is all summer, I'm going to pick the figs and I'm going to quarter them and I'm going to fill up containers in the freezer and freeze them. And then in September, I'll give you a container and I'll keep a container and I'll give a container to Lauren." That's another one of our coworkers. "And we can each make a different recipe of fig jam and then we can trade." How brilliant is that? So last year was the first year that we did it, and I searched for a very long time to find a very particular recipe, because there's something that I've been buying in high-end supermarkets that was like a fig orange spread. Really expensive, like sometimes $7 for a little jar. My favorite way to consume this, oh, it's so good, is a water cracker, a very plain cracker, like a water cracker, and then a little bit of fresh goat cheese or feta cheese, sometimes brie, but that has a little bit too much flavor. I prefer a chèvre, and then a little dollop of this jam. Oh my goodness, it is so good. So I wanted to find a recipe that would mimic that product as much as I could. And I settled on a recipe for something called drunken fig jam. It initially had lemon rind, and cognac in it, but I substituted orange rind and Grand Marnier. And I got quite close to the taste that I wanted to create in this jam. And it was so much fun because Lauren and Guy, my coworkers, they each experimented with their own recipes. And then we each had enough to make about 12 jars, very small jars. And then we traded and we each had some of all three kinds. Very nice to open up around the holidays or to maybe sneak one in a gift basket if you're giving a gift. This has been such a rewarding thing to do with some really cool and interesting people. And that's what got me thinking this September when I was making the fig jam of doing an episode dedicated to the fig. On my website, yarnsatyinhu.com, I provide a link to the base recipe I used for the drunken fig jam, and I also have some photographs of the jam that I made. This year, Guy and Lauren both experimented with new recipes, and I stuck to that orange and fig jam that I had made last time. I had a little bit more than I could fit into the 12 jars I purchased, so I just kept some around in the refrigerator and used it as a spread, I made one of the things that I did with it, because I think a lot of times people don't think about jams too often with savory foods. And maybe it's an old tradition or a little bit more of a European thing to serve jams and chutneys and sweets with meats and other savory kinds of foods. So one of the things I like to do with it is use it as a spread for a grilled cheese sandwich with some very thinly sliced apples. It really elevates a grilled cheese into something elegant that you could serve with a bowl of soup. A little bit of learning. I've been doing quite a bit of research online about figs and fig lore, so I could relay some of that information to you today. And I really found much more than I will be able to report to you here, but I do provide a couple of links on my website for things that may be of further interest to you. First, figs and nutrition. The fig is an especially good source of potassium, calcium, and iron, and has more fiber than any other fruit or vegetable. Dried figs contain even higher concentrations of nutrients, including magnesium, antioxidants, and vitamin B6. When buying fresh figs, choose ones that are dry on the surface, feel heavy in the hand, and have slight cracks, signifying that they are filled with sweet syrup. Figs do not ripen after they've been picked, and they're extremely perishable, lasting only about 3 days in the refrigerator. If you can get figs that last 3 days in the refrigerator, please let me know where you're finding them, because I think 36 hours is about all they last before you need to prepare them, freeze them, or do something with them. They're extremely perishable. Dried figs can be stored up to 6 months in a cool, dark place or in a refrigerator, and they are very popular around the holidays. Figs have some interesting properties. One of them is that they contain a natural humectant, a chemical that will extend freshness and moistness in baked products. So not only for the fig Newton, but for any baked good in which you put figs. It's kind of a natural preservative. Also, a chemical found in figs called sorrelins has been used for thousands of years to treat skin pigmentation diseases. And it's also found that some properties in figs have antimicrobial impact. A little bit of botany for you. Although we refer to the fig as a fruit, it is actually an inverted flower. In a piece I discovered from All Things Considered, which is a radio show on National Public Radio from June 2006, there was a news report about archaeologists in Israel discovering something they didn't expect, an 11,400-year-old fig in an excavated house. And the article went on to explain that this shed some light on the possibility that figs were among the first cultivated plants. Figs were probably originated in southern Arabia and spread throughout Mesopotamia into parts of southern Europe, and were introduced in the New World most likely by Spanish and Portuguese missionaries. Along with the gold rush and rushing out to California for gold, American settlers brought a wide variety of figs to California. And by 1867, there were over 1,000 acres of fig trees in the Sacramento Valley and another 30 to 50 acres in the San Joaquin Valley. The most popular variety, the white Adriatic fig, was planted in a 27-acre orchard in Fresno as early as 1885 and produced the first carload of dried figs shipped by rail to the east in 1889. The United States is third in the world in fig production, and nearly 100% of both fresh and dried figs and figs used commercially are all grown in California. Figs have an incredibly high sugar content, and they're sometimes used as sugar substitutes. They are perhaps the sweetest fruit in the world. Dried figs are sometimes used as a coffee substitute, and one source I read said they may be helpful for smoking cessation. Early Olympian athletes were said to feast on figs as a training food, and the fig is often seen as a sign of fertility, perhaps because of the inverted flower blossom. The fig is a member of the mulberry family, and figs are thought to be some of the first fruits ever cultivated. Though there are hundreds of varieties of figs, the most common ones that are commercially grown are the Calamarna fig, which is usually sold dried, the Black Mission, which is smaller and sweeter than the Calamarna, Brown Turkey, Cadota, and Adriatic figs are also ones that you might find in a health food store or perhaps being grown locally and sold at a farmer's market. A little bit about figs and history, religion, and culture. The fig is the most talked about fruit in the Bible, and figs were mentioned in Babylonian hymn books about 2000 BC. Legend has it that the Greek goddess Demeter first revealed to mortals the fruit of autumn, which they called fig. The ancient city of Attica was famous for its figs, and they soon became a necessity for its citizens, rich or poor. It was actually made illegal to export figs out of Greece at one time, and the ruler Solon of Attica reserved them solely for his citizens. Figs were respected in ancient Rome and considered sacred. According to myth, the twin founders of Rome, Romulus and Remus, rested under a fig tree. The Romans regarded Bacchus as the god who introduced the fig to mankind. This made the tree sacred, and all images of the god were often crowned with fig leaves. The first figs of the season were offered to Bacchus, and at festivals, in his honor, devout females wore garlands of dried figs. The Persian king Xerxes, after his defeat by the Greeks in 480 BC, had figs from Attica served to him at every meal to remind him that he did not possess the land where this fruit grew. It is said that the prophet Muhammad once exclaimed, "If I should wish a fruit brought to paradise, it would certainly be the fig." Figs are mentioned in Homer's Iliad as well as the Odyssey, and the fig is reported to have been the favorite fruit of Cleopatra, with the asp that ended her life being brought to her in a basket of figs. In 812 AD, Charlemagne attempted to introduce the fig to the Netherlands, but was unsuccessful because the fruit could not adapt to the cold weather. In Buddhism, the fig tree is a symbol of enlightenment, and it's believed that Buddha achieved enlightenment while sitting under a Bodhi tree, which is a type of fig tree. Fig wood is very strong and has often been used in building sacred temples and other buildings in the ancient world. Fig wood is very fragrant when burned and is often used for burning in religious rituals. And figs can be used to make wine. Around this time of year, some of us may think about figgy pudding, which is a British tradition, and it's really falling out of favor. I read an article about Michelle Norris, who's an NPR reporter, and Dory Greenspan, a baking expert and the author of Baking From My Home to Yours, who explored this idea of figgy pudding and tried to create a revival. And it does sound like an incredibly interesting dish. It is apparently heresy to refer to it as fruitcake. It's supposed to be much more dense, luscious, and rich than a fruitcake. And rather than being baked, figgy pudding is actually steamed. It's also loaded with booze. And often in serving it, you make the fruitcake, steam it, and then being made with figs, I suppose, it keeps its flavor and its freshness very well. So you can make it well ahead. And then just before serving, you put it back into its mold, re-steam it for about 35, 40 minutes, and then add a bit more alcohol, and you can actually light the figgy pudding on fire, and it kind of flames and smolders and makes an excellent spectacle for a Christmas banquet or a buffet table. I will link to the recipe for figgy pudding from the All Things Considered website on NPR in case you're interested in making figgy pudding part of your holiday celebration this year. The back porch. I've been working on some spinning since I returned from Rhinebeck with a fiber optic gradient top. It's 4 ounces, 80% merino, 20% silk in the honey to fig colorway. And I had been coveting this. It was one thing I had on my list that I really wanted to see in person, and I ended up buying a braid of it at Rhinebeck. I put it on my wheel that weekend after returning in October, and I've been spinning it ever since. It's spun very, very thin, and in order to retain the color gradient from a luscious honey color through oranges, reds, and browns, and then into blues and very deep purples, I decided to chain or Navajo ply it. So it's a triple ply, but it's not a true three ply. It's done in such a way that the color gradation is preserved. I ended up with 433 yards of a heavy fingering weight, I suppose. And now I need to decide what I'm going to knit with this yarn. I have a couple of choices. One thing I considered was a small version of the Daybreak, and I could split the yarn into the lighter colors from yellow through orange and red to brown, and then have a separate ball of the blues and the purples, and I could create a Daybreak shawl by Stephen West. With that, it would have to be a small one because it doesn't have a lot of yardage. Another idea that I had was to work on a pattern I've seen in the color issue of Ply magazine. And as far as I can tell on Ravelry, no one has posted that they've knit this garment yet, but it's called the Clawed Shawl, and it really plays on the idea of color work and contrasting colors being mixed together in this shawl. I will keep you posted about my progress. I'm very pleased with my yardage, and the resulting yarn is very silky and soft. It's nicely spun. It doesn't seem to be underspun or overspun. So I'm pretty pleased with it and looking forward to working it into something very special to wear. On the front porch is another spinning project. This hasn't gone onto my wheel yet, but I hope to do that very soon. I ordered from BZB Fibers 4 ounces of Falkland in the Sour Fig colorway. This braid of fiber is much more in the pastel family and very reminiscent of the white figs that I use to make fig jam this fall. It's purples, a little bit of green, some browns, and the purples range from deep purple to pastel purple. I'm thinking of doing something a little more traditional with this braid of fiber, separating it in half and spinning it as a two-ply, something with a lot of barber poling in it, and maybe something that doesn't have quite as much yardage and a little more heft to the yarn. So I could do something like a hat or mitts, and something more in the smaller accessories category. Off the shelf. I hope you've enjoyed listening to me go on and on about figs this week. In order to compile this episode, I consulted several sources, and I'd like to recommend a few of them to you. One thing that I read through a lot was a book by Isabel Allende, one of my favorite writers, called Aphrodite, A Memoir of the Senses. And another that I mentioned in the opening of the show is a cookbook called Intercourses, an Aphrodisiac Cookbook by Martha Hopkins and Randall Lockridge. This is not something that I would necessarily purchase for myself, but it seems that aphrodisiac cookbooks are becoming a tradition as a wedding gift or a gift from friends when you get engaged. And so I received several of these books as gifts, and they are very interesting to pour through. At the end of Aphrodite by Isabel Allende, there is the most fantastic recipe for rice pudding that I've ever encountered. And if you think rice pudding is something pedestrian, you need to try this recipe because it will change your mind about rice pudding. It's been a while since I've looked at Aphrodite, so I just flipped to the back to her recipe for arroz con leche, or spiritual solace. And this is what Isabel Allende has to say about this rice pudding recipe. Remember my dream about arroz con leche at the beginning of this book? I can't imagine a more sensual or delicious dessert. This recipe will serve 8 normal people, but in my eyes, it's a crime to make less. I'm capable of devouring it at one sitting without blinking an eye, and I don't see why it should be any different in your case, my dear reader. But if you can't finish, you can keep it in the refrigerator. Then, should you be in a good mood, you can cover your lover from head to foot and slowly lick it off. On such an occasion, the calories are justified. Something else that you might enjoy if you're interested in this topic is an interview from The Organic View, which is a website. June Stoyer is one of the journalists who works for this website, and she has an interview with Carla Stockley called Figs, an Ancient Fruit That is Truly Sustainable. I found this of great interest. I repeated a few of the things I learned and that I found on the website, but it's certainly worth listening to this interview in its entirety.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, flowery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, I hope you will consider leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes. You can also join the Yarns at Yinhu group on Ravelry or like the show's Facebook page. The music in today's episode is So Wheat, music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Chris DeLong and Cesar Diaz. Stay strong and eat figs as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire, just like Linda Kurt sings, but out on a wire. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
It's a mighty fine nature thing. Nature's ever get you high till your face is mine. Jump a river naked, hike a country mile. It's a subway nature thing. It's a subway nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.